Stand up, jerk! Mighty strong words, runt. You man enough to back him up with more than just a pie plate?
Look, just leave my friends alone.
What's wrong, dude? You yeller? That's what I thought. A yellow belly. Nobody calls me yellow. Now let's finish it right now.
Not now, Buford. Marshall's got our guns.
Like I said, we'll finish this tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're robbing the Pond City stage.
What about Monday? We doing anything Monday?
Hold on, let me check. No, Monday'd be fine. You can kill him on Monday.
What the heck is that?
It's a new iPhone?
You and your toy. I'll be back this way Monday. We'll settle this in. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
Noon. I do my killing before breakfast. 7 o'clock!
8 o'clock. I do my killing after breakfast.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
You are about to enter a dimension of sight and sound. Nobody knows exactly how to enter.
Over there, in the media corner.
Oh, thank you.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. This is the show for Wednesday, August 22nd, 2007. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm alive and geeking. Kicking, geeking, you know.
You gotta see the doctor about that, man. That doesn't sound quite right.
No, that's the problem. He won't see me anymore.
I got an appointment with a doctor, and it takes 3 months. I called him up this week and said, I got a back problem. He said, oh, yes, she's taking appointments for November.
Great, I'll just live with the pain until then. No problem.
I like being hunched over for 3 months.
Do you think you have to go to the emergency room, or your insurance will cover a case of geeking?
Geeking. My shirts won't cover it.
Geek. Coming up in tonight's show, we've got action figure mods.
Mm-hmm.
What's that? I'm curious as to that. We talk about keyboards.
Yes.
And an ode to digital watches.
Ascend up to
coming
the...
up. Coming up after On This Day in Tech History.
Is it that time?
On this day in tech history for August 22nd, 2007. This is August 22nd. It's the 234th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are just 131 days remaining in 2007. It was on this date in 1654 that Jacob Bar Simpson arrives in New Amsterdam. He's the first Jewish immigrant to what is later known as the United States. On August 22nd, 1770, James Cook's expedition lands on the east coast of Australia. And exactly 10 years later, his ship HMS Resolution returns to England, Cook having been killed on Hawaii during the voyage. August 22nd is the first air raid of history, as the Austrian release incendiary bombs on Venice on this date in 1849. The Cadillac Motor Company is founded on this date in 1901, and exactly 1 year later, Theodore Roosevelt became the first president of the United States to ride in an automobile. Was it a Cadillac?
Who knows?
It was on August 22nd, 1963, that Joe Walker in the X-15 test plane reaches an altitude of 106 kilometers or 67 miles. The first ring of Neptune is discovered on this date in 1989. Happy birthday goes out on this date in 1647 to Denis Papin, the French physicist and inventor, and the founding father of machine tool technology, Henri Maudslay, was born on this date in 1771. French explorer Ami Bonpland was born on this date in 1773. August 22nd, 1881 is the birthday of William Kelly, the American inventor. He's the man who gave us the process to reduce the carbon content in iron and turn it into steel. Today is also the birthday of Samuel Pierpont Langley, who was born on this date in 1834. Some say he was actually the first to have a heavier-than-air flight in 1896. Assistant to Enrico Fermi and namesake of the prestigious Pontecorvo Prize, Bruno Pontecorvo was born on this date in 1913. Gerald P. Carr, the American astronaut who spent 84 days aboard Skylab, turned 75 today. Japanese computer scientist Masatoshi Shima, who is partly responsible for the world's first microprocessor, the Intel 4004, turns 64 today. And finally, Turkish computer scientist, an electrical engineer, and applied mathematician, Errol Gellenby, turns 62 today. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for August 22nd, 2007.
Oh my God, they grow out of those pods.
This is Summer Brooks from the Dragon Page, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Chuck Chat Technorama. Can you figure out who's the one and who's the zero?
Welcome back to Technorama.
Yes, welcome back.
We'd just like to remind everybody that we still have a contest. We have 5 prize packs for History International's Naked Archaeologist. If you want to participate, send email to contest@chunkchat.com. Put Naked Archaeologist in the subject, and you will be entered to win the drawing at the end of the month. We are promoting the Naked Archaeologist on History International all through the month of August. That is all.
Okay. See, I didn't say anything smart about the Naked Archaeologist this time.
I was waiting for it, but you just... didn't come through. See,
I always got to leave you wanting a little bit more.
All right. Also want to give a shout out to the chat room at this point. We've got Country Signs, Captain Rootbeer, Teb Drup, D with the NCAF 1, JT from the Gigcast, Lord Cat, Madmar, Mark Shepard, Mike King, Missing Intellect, Mr. Gadgets. There's a whole bunch of stuff with M. Night Star, Scott R. That rhymes. Tim Elliott, and TWB host SB.
TWBOSBD. No, wait a minute. Never mind.
Stop. If you happen to be around on Sunday nights and you'd like to participate in all the shenanigans and in the chat room and on the webcam, we'd love to see you there around, show up around 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, and we'll take care of you. Lots of friendly people in there will do the same.
Hmm.
We also have only one birthday on the birthday calendar this week, and I don't know who put it there.
I'm trying to figure this out.
Yes?
Chuck's forgotten iPod. Why is that in this happy birthday list?
I don't know. We're going to have to check the revision history, see who put that in there, because I don't think I bought my first one in August. I think that was March or April.
Chuck's forgotten? Where? I don't understand.
I didn't forget nothing. But that's what was in there. So
especially that expensive iPod.
Happy birthday to my forgotten iPod. If this happens to be your birthday and you're not on the birthday calendar, happy birthday to you. We wish you all the best. And if you just happen to know somebody, we wish them happy birthday as well.
Yeah.
If you want to get on listener birthday calendar for next week or any time in the next year, and we will catch it when the time comes around, you can go to chuckchat.com/wiki, look for the fun and games, and put your name in the listener birthday calendar. Simple as that. If it sounds too confusing, send us an email, and we'll take care of that. Technorama@chuckchat.com.
Hey, and speaking of, we're talking about the wiki with the birthdays and stuff, we're going to have to make a change. We're going to have to make a little change with the wiki. I don't know exactly what we're going to change. Maybe it's the way people register to use it, because this is getting annoying.
We're getting spam blasted.
Yes, big time. Every time I turn around and I removed a bunch of crap, five more craps come up. It's just crazy. I'm fighting a losing battle, and I'm not going to do this like I did with email and spam. So, you know, maybe we'll have to have people email us to register. I don't know.
Yeah, email registration sounds like the best thing.
We'll let you know in the next show, but this is just getting crazy.
Moving into the news.
Oh, great news, everyone.
I do have a quick update. Immersion Presents. You remember, about 16 months ago, if you're a longtime listener to Technorama, we interviewed a gentleman by the name of Tom Dudchick, and we play his sweeper dealy beep in there every once in a while. He says, hi, this is Tom Dudchick from Immersion Presents. Anyway, Immersion Presents is where sort of the electronic home of Dr. Robert Ballard, the guy who discovered the Titanic. He is on an expedition right now to the Black Sea and doing a lot of underwater exploration there. And their website will have daily vignettes, little short video updates from Dr. Ballard, August 18th through 26th. So by the time you hear this, it's well underway. You can go back and see some of the other ones as well.
Now, he was talking about doing videos before, wasn't he, with this
Yeah, they've done live video stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean.
I don't have information on that, but I did receive
a
notification.
So they changed it into a podcast?
No, it's not a podcast. This is just going to be a little streaming deal. He's going to have like a daily diary that he posts up there.
I was going to say, somebody finally listened to you and took your advice and made a podcast.
I didn't see an RSS link, but that would be cool, too.
That would be cool.
Might have to talk to Mr. Dudchick through various channels. We'll see what happens. So look for more content about Dr. Robert Ballard coming up in Technorama News shortly, if everything pulls together. Keep your binary fingers crossed.
Both of them.
Listener Steve Holden and fellow Friends in Tech podcaster sent in an audio or a story about the Aquanauts home undersea. And when I first saw this, it reminded me of one of those popular science things from the 50s, like, in 50 years, we'll all be living underwater.
Hey, by the way, I like the name Aquanaut.
Aquanaut.
That's cool.
That is a good... Well, that's... What they're not astronauts. What do you expect them to be?
No, underwater people? I don't know.
Nice.
I don't know. I guess.
This guy is. It shows this guy living in a shed that. An underwater house that looks like about the size of the shed in my backyard.
You know what? If he was living in that in above ground, you know, the police might be checking him out. But underwater, it's okay.
Wasn't this the guy who lived at Ruby Ridge or something?
Yeah. I guess it's PC to live in something like that underwater. I don't know.
But they're supposed to be spending 13-day missions, and in there is a coil to oxygenate. They've got algae that helps oxygenate the air and monitors to make sure everything is all set, some exercise equipment. But there really isn't a whole lot else to do unless, you know... Part of the...
Well, speaking of not much to do, look at the toilet.
Yeah.
It's like a little box in the corner.
Yeah, that's not going to hold 13 days of anything.
Couldn't they spring for a little extra room and a bigger toilet?
Yeah, this thing only looks like it's about 8 feet by 12 feet, which isn't a whole lot of room to live in.
He wouldn't even have to worry about water and how much water he's got in the tank. He just... It's water everywhere.
Well, if you're in salt water, different story.
Does it matter? Oh, wait a minute. There we are. Greg is going to get on us. We're getting in the bathroom again.
Steering clear of that, we're going to take a quick break and come back with Hacks and Strange Stories.
Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT.
Be a part of the Friends in Tech community. Visit the FIT forums at forums.friendsintech.com.
We want it. We need it. We must have Technorama. My precious.
Hacks and Strange Stories.
Yeah. Okay.
What have you found?
Doesn't
look right.
It doesn't look right? Well, you know, if you think back, I never had a sister, but, you know, I've probably heard stories of people taking their sister's dolls and removing the heads and swapping it out with something else to make another creature. Like,
Kind of like Toy Story.
Yeah.
What Sid was doing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I never did that. I had five sisters. Nope, never did that. Nope. Usually fireworks were involved in somewhere.
Never. I bet Chuck was beating up the kids that did that to his sisters.
Right.
Anyway, this is an article over at Wired Magazine talking about action figure modders, and people were starting to do this and really getting some interesting results, taking bits and pieces off of other action figures and mixing them together and making something that they actually would want. Like, for example, there's one from a character from The Watchmen this guy made, and there's a whole slideshow, but there is a Wired, I guess, keeps a wiki on how to make your own action figure, and there's some tips and hints on how to do that yourself. So I thought it was pretty cool. I kind of flipped through it a little bit, and it was talking about, you know, the different shapes and figures, and you want the guy with the shirt on or not a shirt, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, it talks about using an X-Acto blade to cut the pieces off and piece them together. I think it's kind of cool. What?
So you could put, like, you know, the Hulk's pants on My Little Pony or something? Or
what? Yeah, that's exactly what they're saying. Actually, you know what? I'd like to see the Chuck and Craig action figure.
Okay. Before or after your weight loss program?
After. I want it current, okay? No, okay. Actually, that's the spiel with mine. You hit the button and, you know.
He's got fat action.
Kung Fu action, fat action.
The other story we have is from Bookaroo.
Kung Fu gut.
The other story we have is from Bookaroo. It allows you to hook together several coffee mugs.
I'm sorry,
at once.
I'm still going on that Kung Fu gut action. There you go.
Are you done yet?
Okay, I'm sorry. Let's move along.
All right, Bookaroo has sent us a link that lets you link several mugs at the same time, so you can carry, you know, up to 6 cups of coffee at a time. This doesn't make sense because as soon as you tip one to take a drink, you're going to get a face full or a shirt full from the other 5.
It's kind of neat.
But if you need to carry them like a waitress, you know, from one place to another, you can get 6 at a time, which is far easier than, you know, using multiple fingers. Or maybe you should just use a tray like a lot of normal people would do.
Yeah, actually, I think this would be cool in like coffee shops, you know, because you just stick them together and then, see, the thing is,
oh, or like in the beer halls in Germany.
Ah, there you go. Enough said.
Connect like 18 of these beer steins together.
You have me at beer. Okay. But yeah, that's pretty cool. Actually, if they had decorative steins, so that'd be cool.
All right. We have a segment from Will, the computer guy.
Will, the computer guy?
Regarding old time connections. Yeah. Remember when segment. Hold cool. on for that.
All right.
Remember when you had to burn wood or some fossil fuel to cook your food? Remember when you had one phone in your house and it was attached to the wall? Remember when computers filled a room the size of your garage? Technorama remembers.
Will, the computer guy here with a vintage computer moment. Now, I'm only 37, so I don't have quite the geek experience that others who call it have. For example, punch cards are an interesting artifact for me. I don't have any first-hand experience using them. Anyway, back in 1994, I got my first email account through a university Unix system with a dial-in number. I think we were up to 14.4 at that point. I dialed in using an old 286 laptop with an external 14.4 modem. My screen was 80 columns wide and 25 rows tall. My hard drive had 40 megabytes of disk space, which I partitioned into 30 and 10 so I could have a place for all my zip files from my BBS days. So not only would I BBS, but then I would dial into the Unix system and check my email and browse with the Lynx text browser. But when I found files to download, I would download them, and they would be on my shell account's file server there. To get them to me, because I'm over a modem, I had to use the Z modem protocol. So in my terminal program, I would set it for Z modem download, And up on the Unix server, I would do the Z modem upload command, both of which I could not tell you to this day what they are. It's been too long. I've been gooey eyes. Anyway, I had a blast. I also used to do AOL DOS back in those days. And there was a multi-user dungeon, or a MUD, actually it was a MUSH, multi-user shared hallucination for Battletech that I was a part of a clan, and we would run our imaginary 30-foot-tall robots around and go stomp and kill and cause murder and mayhem. It was a blast. Man, the good old days. Anyway, I'm on my way to work again. Have a good day. Bye.
It sounds like Will's pining for the old days with the dial-up connection.
Hey, like he's some spring chicken. I mean, 37? Come on, man. I'm only 38. Now, I didn't really have any first-hand experience with punch cards either, but...
I've got first-hand, I've got right-hand, I've got left-hand, I've got webcam experience with punch cards, I've got...
wait a minute, how old are you, Chuck? You're only like 41, right?
The answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Oh, you're 42? Well...
Cha-ching!
Well, I mean, come on, you're not that...
There.
You're not that old, come on.
No, but I'm old enough to... let's just say I aged a little before my time.
Hmm. So you're like vinegar instead of the wine?
Yeah, thanks.
Well, what were you using these punch cards for besides getting autographs at the expo?
These are actual old programs from my high school years. I wrote Fortran programs on punch cards.
Punch cards, okay. Well, I did too, but I used a keyboard.
If A equals 00, go to 70. Here's some data cards. I won't read you the whole thing. They're kind of boring when you just look at them. Here's some that are blank. And now they act as my, cue cards for the podcast on the webcam.
For signature collectors.
All right, we also got a link in the Remember When segment on the Apple QuickTake 100, Apple's first digital camera, a serial killer. Oh my goodness, this is from 1995, 1996. I think this is a rebranded version of the Kodak, because we had one at work that looked an awful lot like this.
It may have been.
It looks like a pair of binoculars, and... takes 640 by 480 pictures.
Hey, that's pretty good for 1993.
And if I remember right, it would hold about 20 pictures. Let's see. The camera was launched in Tokyo Macworld Expo in February of 1994 and will be available in May of 1994. To work with Apple Macintosh computers, expect a street price of £535. Oh, man.
Wow.
If you go by today's exchange rate, that's over $1,000. Wow. The camera can store up to 32 images at a resolution of 320 by 240. Wow.
Consider what digital cameras were like at the end of the 1990s.
We had something very similar. In fact, the LCD looks... darn near identical to the Kodak we had. I don't remember which one it was. But, yeah, I used to take that around, and some of the earliest digital pictures I have, other than the ones that were using the frame grabber card that I had in my old Mac from video, were from that camera. Mm-hmm. So that was it was fun to play around with. But
everybody's
going, whoa,
actually,
it's
you know
just,
what?
It's, yeah?
I was going to say, it looks like kind of futuristic, like one of those... like that, those binocular things that Luke Skywalker had on Hoth.
I was going to say the exact same thing when he's scanning the horizon.
Yeah, I don't see anything but this little meteor out there, huh? Yeah, it looks pretty cool, though.
All right, another quick break, and we will be right back.
Okay.
Will the computer guy.
Dun, 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 dun. The man with his own voicemail show.
Will, the computer guy. It's a voicemail from Will, the computer guy. Doesn't this guy have anything better to do?
We're just having fun, you know that.
Yeah.
Again.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hi, this is John Bell from Bells in the Bat Free, along with...
Hi, I'm Miss Schmackelheimer, Miss Sadie Schmackelheimer.
And you're listening to Technorama.
I'm not saying that.
You gotta say it, it's their slogan.
I don't care.
You've got to say that's the whole idea behind doing this.
I'm not saying that it's stupid.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Get your geek on.
That wasn't so hard, was it? 101.
Now, we have this under What the Craig, but it's not really a rant in our usual terms. You just needed a place to dump this.
No, it's not a rant. Actually,
okay.
Well,
then you have the floor.
The floor?
What are we talking about?
Well, I want to talk about keyboards, because, you know, I've always used, I hate the flat keyboards, even though I've got one here now. The MacBook Pro's is a pretty nice keyboard, but I use, the Microsoft Natural Keyboards, because I have to say that some of the Microsoft hardware is pretty good. But the Natural Keyboards, I just like the way they feel. They're very comfortable. I forget the current model I've got at the office, but it's like a Natural, I want to say 3000 or something like that. It's got black with the little wrist pads on it. It's nice, comfortable. But anyway, that's what I pretty much stuck with for the last 10 years, at least, is the Natural Keyboard. Now, I was curious what other people will use, and the reason I brought this up is because Brad from the whole Lot of Nonsense podcast, he had a picture mm-hmm. showing his desktop, and it had a keyboard, one of the Kinesis keyboards that has like little cups.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, where you put your hands over them?
I think so.
Yeah, well, it looked pretty comfortable, but I wasn't sure about that, and I was curious if anybody else had used those. He said he called it a Kinesis keyboard. He got it from, I'm looking at the website now. Anyway, they got several different types of keyboards, PS2 and USB versions, where it's like I said, it's two cups and all that. Anyway, I'm curious what other people use, because, you know, for a while I had a little touch of carpal tunnel that I was able to circumvent by changing up my mouse. But the keyboard isn't really a problem. Now, like I said, I'm using a Natural Keyboard, so I'm curious what everybody else has used. What do you use, Chuck? Just the regular flat?
I generally stick with the flat ones. To me, it's more about touch. Moving using the Natural Keyboards, I've done that in the mm-hmm. past, but I really didn't get the bang out of it that I expected. In fact, I did have one adverse side effect. You are a touch typist, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't look at your fingers when you're typing. You just make more mistakes.
I look a little back and forth, but normally I can just touch time.
The thing I found out was, I think it was where the split is on those Microsoft keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
I would reach for the B key with my right hand. And when I got that Natural Keyboard, I'd always type like, "Dear Bob," and it would go, "Dear Thunk, oh Thunk," because I'd hit that blank spot in the middle. There was no key. And like, yeah. Oh, man, they moved the B over to the other side.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly halfway between. I mean, you can go either way on that
it
thing,
is.
But the proper way yeah. is to hit it with your left hand.
That did take me a little while to get used to having to reach out. I was kept wanting to reach over and hit the B, just like you said. But after I got used to that, it wasn't so much as speed as more as comfort. And when I get on a flat, regular straight 104 keyboard, it's like, I feel like my thumbs are fighting for space. Like, you know, you're like, you and your sibling are going, "Don't touch me, get over here, get, you know,
but
and what, get out of my,
you know,
space."
By moving your elbows out, that really doesn't make anything more comfortable.
No, it's just
not to me. The ideal keyboard that I always thought would be the best
mm-hmm.
would be to take like two soda cans and put buttons on them so that your hands are now vertical. That's a natural hand position. It's not natural to roll your wrists over 90 degrees. All you're doing with the Natural Keyboard is undoing about 5 degrees of that.
No,
so let's take it 90 degrees and just make it a straight-up soda can. If you're a touch typist, you don't need to know where those keys are. You don't need to see them. Just hit them where you naturally would.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that'd be my ultimate keyboard.
Yeah, I kind of disagree, because when the split's like that, when my elbows and my hands are straight, you know, they're straight out.
Right, but what have you just done to your shoulders? It's not natural to have your shoulders like that.
I'm just sitting. Yeah, it is. I'm just sitting normal.
Go talk to an orthopedic surgeon sometime and see what they think. It may be better, but it's not as good as it could be.
Well, it's better. What else do you want?
I want a fully ergonomic keyboard.
Okay.
The Microsoft one is partly there.
Hmm. Well, you know, I had a friend that had a keyboard, and it was an older one. He had to use a USB adapter to use it, but he had a little dial on the side. And as you turn it, much like the split, okay, it's like a flat keyboard, right? Well, where the split was, what you were talking about, mm-hmm. was actually it would raise up. So the keyboard was actually almost like a little stand in the middle. The keys, you would put your hands together like you're praying.
Yeah.
You know, but separate your hands, and the keys were between your finger, your hands.
I think I've seen that one. Yeah. But it was horribly expensive.
He got it off eBay for a deal now. But yes, at the time it was expensive. But it was a little odd at first. I messed with it. I typed on it a few times, but it wasn't that bad. But I don't know. That's kind of where I thought about this contoured with the cup shape keyboards. And anyway, I'm just curious if anybody else had experience with it, because these are kind of expensive, and I wouldn't mind trying it, but I'm not going to buy one without hearing somebody's testimonial on it.
Tell us what you think. Send us your thoughts.
Send your comments to technorama at chuckchat.com.
You'll have to speak up, Marilyn.
Send your comments to technorama at chuckchat.com.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take another. Yes.
And real quick, I want to add my carpal tunnel.
Yes.
I changed from a mouse to a stylus and a like a pad.
Yes.
And it worked, and it helped me out. I'm curious. What? No, I was going to say, I'm curious what everybody else's experience were with if they had carpal tunnel, you know, or if they did anything. But once I changed to that little stylus with the one of those pads like that with a pen, and it cleared it up. So I was curious what everybody else had. Anybody else had the same experience?
Let us know. We'll be back right after the break.
There's people else, you know, but in plane, you know, when it's by wing planes, fan the hold on. Superman and finals and all the areas supposed to incorporate everything. Maybe I need to go over there and head that check that out. What I'm getting at, I guess, is express milks Renault's. 1790 is greater than 3 divided by 6, and it's the same number of.
Here he goes again.
In the, or possibly earlier, or possibly day earlier. A day earlier.
Technorama. It'll leave you speechless.
Oh, well.
Hi, this is T. Morris of Podcasting for Dummies and Billabub Battings and the Case of the Singing Sword. And you're listening to Technorama, who ask you to upgrade from Windows XP and get a Mac. And now, your hosts, Chuck and Craig.
Digital Watch, Where Art Thou? By Julio Diaz. It was Douglas Adams in his book The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy who said that the ape-descended lifeforms in our utterly insignificant little blue-green planet were so amazingly primitive as to still think digital watches were a pretty neat idea. Well, I'm one of those primitive lifeforms because I do think digital watches are a neat idea. I'm a geek after all. My first watch as a kid was a digital pre-liquid crystal display model. You had to press a button to read the time. The numbers were made out of red LEDs, a dinosaur by today's standards, but a real cool watch to have back then. Even non-nerdy kids liked it. After that, I had numerous digital watches with real LCD displays. They'd work fine until I forget they weren't waterproof. Then they would succumb to a cold and watery death while I washed my tennis shoes or my mom's car. Some friends wore digital watches with games where you could race cars or catch balls. What could be cooler than that? I mean, games right on your watch. My secret weapon during math exams? A calculator watch. I remember working those microscopic silicon keys like a concert pianist. Well, actually I just pressed one at a time, but I'm darn sure I could have calculated the trajectory of an Apollo mission with my little watch if I had been given the chance. I spent my 20s wearing several incarnations of the Casio Data Bank. Not the most fashionable watch by any means, but I use every one of its functions regularly, for anything from converting currencies to reminding me of orthodontist appointments. I stored ATM pin numbers on it, and phone numbers, of course. My younger cousins love to check the time for other parts of the world on it. How I wish I could say that my digital watch-wearing days continued happily ever after, but slowly, economic changes, newer technologies, fashion, and ultimately love confabulated against me and my trusty digital timekeeping friend. Currency exchange rates stabilize, so I rarely needed a calculator on my watch anymore. I got a cell phone and was able to easily keep phone numbers in its memory. No need to store them in my old watch with its microscopic buttons. When my teenage cousin told me that calculator watches were so last century, I dismissed him. But when my beautiful fiancé gave me a nice analog watch as a Valentine's present, I had to accept it. It seemed wrong right from the beginning. This watch had no numbers in it, just four tiny marks. Now, here's a question. If we humans represent time by a system of numbers, shouldn't timekeeping pieces have numbers? My thoughts were, I'm an IT guy. I can handle it. Even with no numbers, I can still figure out what the time is. No problem. Boy, was I wrong. Not since analytic geometry in high school had I put my brain through such strain. First mark represents 3, second mark is 6. If the hour hand is just about a third of the way between these two, it means it's 4. Okay, remember that number, 4. Now, the minute hand is a little over two-thirds between the third mark, which represents 9, and the 12th mark, so that means it's around minute 55. What was that number I'm supposed to remember? Oh, that's right, 4. 4:55. Nope, that's not right. It's 3:55. I remember the expression on people's faces when, after asking me the time, saw me enter a deep geometry and mathematics-induced trance. After a whole year of this, my now wife gave me a second watch, the one I currently wear. This one has a mark for each hour, so I only struggle half as much to tell the time. During daytime, that is. Since at night, even though I have good vision, it's impossible to tell where the minute hand is. It either gets camouflaged under a myriad of silvery reflections, or there is simply not enough light to make out the hands. I miss my old digital watch. I could tell the time in a nanosecond. I knew precisely what day of the week it was, and the day of the month adjusted correctly every time the month changed. I had the miraculous ability to check the time in complete darkness. Now, after checking countless store displays for an alternative, I've come upon the sad realization that the beauty of something barely less archaic than a sundial and the functionality of a liquid crystal binary marvel have yet to elegantly share a wristband. In other words, analog watches are dumb, and digital watches are an ugly, neat idea.
And now your comments, yes.
I want to thank Julio for sending that in.
That was cool. That was something he had written a long time ago, and when we started talking about watches, he said, oh, I've got to record this.
And you know what? It still holds up for today, right?
I have never had a problem with analog watches or clocks.
I haven't either.
Maybe that's because what I learned on. When my sister taught me how to tell time when I was 5 or 6 years old, we started on an analog clock. That's what we have in the kitchen. In fact, my kitchen clock is down in the workroom right now. Mm-hmm. It's an old butt-ugly avocado thing.
Well, you know what I got a problem with? I have a digital clock in the car, right? But it's 6 minutes off. So if it was correct, I'd always get in the car and I'd do the 6 minute conversion in my head and I'd be off. So I got to make sure it's 6 minutes off. You ever had a clock like that where it was just off and you knew it was off, but if you ever tried to make it right, you'd still do the conversion in your head?
No, I usually fix them. I'm okay within about 1 or 2 minutes. If it's more than that off, I'll fix it.
Well, the problem was I got used to it. I was like, oh, I'm driving down the road and I go, oh, that thing's about 6 minutes off. And then I never did it, but I always remembered it. But the problem is I just changed the battery today, and should I set it right or should I set it 6 minutes off?
The ones I don't understand are the people who set their clocks, 10 minutes ahead and then use the snooze alarm so they get up at the right time. What's that all about? I think we've had that discussion before.
We've had that discussion. You beat it.
Okay, then we'll leave that alone.
Dead horse, stop beating.
No, dead? I think we put that one in the glue factory.
But I don't know. I'm with him. I just can't really. I'm with Julio. As far as my feelings, you can
glance at a digital watch and it will tell you. Now, the real question is, did he use military time?
Uh-oh.
1532, is that 5, 3, 5? What time is it?
And just subtract 12 from whatever.
If you want to comment, let us know. Looking a little further in our geek library, we got I don't know if it's an org chart, flow chart. What would you call this thing?
The geek hierarchy.
The geek hierarchy. This is from Marv.
The problem is, we, me and you, and Technorama should be on the top.
That's right. I see podcasters nowhere in here, so this doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, this has not been updated for the new millennium.
There will be a link in the show notes. You can take a look at it. And, I mean, they've got sci-fi and fantasy and Trekkies and comic book fans. And, yeah, they're all in here. You can kind of figure out where you fall on this thing. Or you may be in multiple categories. Where on the hierarchy do you live? And, of course, there's just some absurd nonsense in there as well. But wouldn't be Technorama fodder if it wasn't.
Yeah.
We also got a link from, I think it was Bruce Barr, for the Windows Certification Cram Sessions, and you can find that over at itidiots.com. We're not going to go through the whole thing, but it looks like a nice little tutorial if you're studying for your MCSE or something. Take a look at those.
Hey, you know, there used to be a website called, was it braindump.org or something like that? And they would encourage you, after you take the test, to run to your computer and write down the questions.
Really?
Yeah, so... Yeah, they would encourage you, because you can't write anything while you're there taking the test, right?
Oh, that's right. You know, I did something like that for my Coast Guard test, because the guy who helped me study, as soon as we got done with the test, he wanted to make sure his materials were up to date. He said, were there any that you hadn't seen or you know, that I didn't cover?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he would take notes on as we rode back from Toledo to Marquette.
Hmm.
That takes us to the end. We are done.
Man, it's like, now we got to wait another week.
We just got started. Maybe we ought to go back to two a week. Nah.
Oh, my gosh.
We want to give you a reminder, speaking of things, we've got some travel coming up. It is a holiday in the U.S. Labor Day is coming up in a couple of weeks. September 3rd, we are off. Both of us will be spending time with our families. But we do have some audio to keep you occupied. It will be a bit long. So, yeah, well, I think if you add the regular show and the voicemail show together, it comes out to about the same as what we're going to give you.
Yeah.
It's an audio tour of Discovery World.
And maybe we can release it a little early so you can get a head start on it.
Maybe.
Yeah, if you're good.
Maybe, maybe not. We do have some technical changes coming down the pike, too. So if you experience goofiness with the feed, I'm just giving you a forewarning. We don't expect anything, but we're changing a little few things behind the scenes and wanted to let you know that if you do spot anything wacky, funky, just out of the ordinary, hey, and the show didn't come down, or iTunes is complaining, please drop us an email at technorama@chuckchat.com, and we can check into that, because we are doing a little bit of beta testing for the Farpoint Media people.
Yeah, and by the way, the last time we posted the show, I apologize for that, but we had a little glitch where the last 10 minutes of the show got cut off. You know, that's like the best part, man. No, wait.
Yeah, like now. This is in the last 10 minutes. See what you'd be missing?
Yeah. So I reposted it with a different, you know, a different entry and everything on the blog. So I'm sorry if you got it twice. However, I wanted to make sure everybody got the whole thing rather than going, hey, what happened? So I apologize for that.
Speaking of changes and things, the live show at the PME, the time has been backed up a little bit. We will be starting the Three Ring Circus with Dan Klass and Grant from Dr. Floyd and Chuck and Craig from Technorama.
Who?
That'll all be starting at 7 p.m. out on the Pacific Coast, Friday, September 28th, Marriott Suite 306. If you show up for one, you're there for all of them. If there are any other changes, we will let you know. But the best place to keep an eye on that is at drfloyd.com/expo, drftorfloyd.com/expo. And that'll have all the information. There will be a sign up there shortly if you want to reserve a seat, just to make sure you've got a place to sit. And we better do that so we make sure we have a place to sit.
Hey, yeah. Yeah. Do we need a place to sit?
Well, we might for Dr. Floyd. We won't for our show.
Yeah. Do we have to pay to get in? I'm just kidding.
No, it's always been free. It will be free.
Yeah.
We appreciate your support for Technorama. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email us at technorama@chuckchat.com. If you've got feedback, if you've got show contributions, if you've got just goofy things, we have also added Mad Marv to that list. So now he can take some of the better stuff and stick it in the blog so everybody can see it, even if they don't listen to the podcast or if they just go to the website on an off day. We'll catch you there. So you might start seeing some crossover material. That's good. There's also the website at chuckchat.com if you just happen to be listening to this. Oh, I don't know, you're mulling around the Apple Store and Craig or I happen to have brought Technorama up on the iTunes again. And you go, hey, what's this? Go to chuckchat.com, find out the whole story about everything else. We also appreciate...
By the way,
yeah,
if you're ever in an Apple Store, subscribe to Technorama on all the computers.
That's your mission in life. Go out and spread the word. You can also donate in the tip jar. We've got a one-time donation button or a monthly micropayment. We appreciate everybody who's been supporting that. We already mentioned iTunes, so you can write us a review on the iTunes Music Store. You happen to be in an Apple Store? Do it!
Yeah. Hey, the tips, they're for the children. Come on, man.
Think about the children.
The geeks.
Thank you to the following people for donating their time and talent to keep Technorama going. Daphne Calfon, who provides some of the music behind the sweepers and things you hear. She's at daphne.ca. You can find a link in the show notes. Mad Marv, who provides all the great blog content. Scott Reynolds, who, well, we're going to have to take this bullet item out because he's not doing that anymore. We're on Ustream on Sunday nights, ustream.tv, or you can go to chuckchat.com/webcam and see both our mugs talking to you at the same time. It's a great old time.
We thank him for all the effort he did in the past.
Yeah. Now he needs some time off to recuperate.
Yeah.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with Farpoint Media and a whole bunch of great audio content over there in farpointmedia.net. Tell a friend about Technorama. We will appreciate it. Do that thing at the Apple Store with iTunes, and we'll appreciate it even more. I don't know. They must reimage those nightly. Till next time, binary high five.
101. What are we at? Oh, yeah. I planned that, man.